from KQED.
Hey everyone, I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Carly.
And I'm Jamidra.
And we're the hosts of
The Cooler.
This week, fresh off serving as a juror in a three-week trial, I'm here to spill all the beans and hand out some survival tips in case Uncle Sam decides he wants you on a jury.
Oh, this will be like watching that OJ movie all over again.
It's just like that.
Okay.
I have a perm. It's on.
Yeah.
We will also be talking about the men revealed by the Me Too movement, planning their inevitable comebacks, and whether we're going to let them.
This is one Return of the Mac I'm not, you know. I was looking for Mark Morrison, but not so much this. And for all my POCs out there, can you be woke if you have a white partner?
Ooh.
Some corners of the internet say no.
When I was younger, a long time ago.
Very long time ago.
Thanks
Cue
for that.
The harp and then in the fog.
We're the same age, 22.
Taylor Swift wrote a whole song about us. I loved receiving mail back in the day. You know, you would get your AOL free trials.
Right.
You would get that Columbia House thing with the stickers of the albums, and you get to order music.
Thrilling.
I remember that.
Pen pal letters, if you were into that. Also, my sister's magazines. Before she would see them, I would snatch them.
Sneaky.
Sorry, Mindy.
Squirrel.
Back in the day, checking the mail was my fave. These days, not so much. I'm getting scary IRS bills. Weirdly pointed letters from my landlord. Don't want that. And dun dun dun, jury summons.
Ooh.
Every year.
Do you get it every year?
They snatch me every year.
I feel like someone told me, and I don't know if this is true, so don't quote me, that if you do any transactions at the DMV or, you know, you register to vote or anything like that, then you start to get the summons. And every time I move, I feel like I get one.
Interesting. So like a button goes off in this, it starts flashing in some room, in some basement.
Rafiki pops out and he's like, it's time.
They can sense that I love voting too much, and they're like, he should pay for that.
Also, you strike me as exceptionally civically engaged.
I am, yeah. I usually don't sweat the summons, though, because I get out of it every time. Last year, I delivered a passionate rant about how messed up the Supreme Court Citizens United decision was. I have feelings, and I let them know. I was saying things like, corporations are not people. Nothing you can say will change my mind. And they were like, we just asked your name and date of birth.
I was going to say, is this related at all to what the case was?
Calm down, and you've been excused.
Sir, you were in a library.
Yes. So this year I plan to do something similar, like go on a rant about something that I actually believe in. I don't want to lie, but just, you know, turn it up to 10. That was my plan, and it did not work this time.
Can I just say that I have never been on a jury? And
the
closest that I've been called, like I once made it to the actual courthouse. Like usually when I call, they'll say, oh, you're not selected. I made it to the actual courthouse. I was super excited, waited around all day, and they didn't select me. That's the closest I've come.
You're like, guys, I just found parking.
I want my time. I want my time. Okay? I want to be a peer at some point.
Well, dude, I've never been on one either. I consistently get called up and I'm like, nice try. I can't legally serve because I'm an immigrant.
And they don't know that?
They don't appear to know that. So why waste the paper? But someone is a citizen and someone can serve. And that is you, Emmanuel.
Hello.
We wondered where you'd gone.
Yep. I was in a courthouse doing my civic duty, being as fair as possible. I feel like they could sense that I was a Libra. So they were like, we need him on this.
The scales of justice.
Yeah. So I was like putting out in the universe like Oprah, The Secret style, like manifesting a dream. I want to be a judge on either Top Model, Drag Race, or Project Runway. And the universe heard my call.
Clearly.
And responded by putting me on a three-week trial. And that is not exactly what I had in mind, Cosmos. Not.
You're like, I'm judgmental in different ways.
Yes. I love judging people just like walking down the street, but not in a structured situation where I can't leave the room and I can't talk and I might be held in contempt for eye rolling.
Really?
Well, maybe not. I did eye roll, so they didn't.
I was going to say, honey, they would have threw me under the jail.
But just like Beyonce, I was offered lemons and I'm going to make lemonade.
Go ahead.
In the form of a survival guide for you guys in case you are ever selected to be on a jury.
Always with the civic duty.
Clearly, yes. I'll never be selected, but I'll go ahead and listen anyway.
Okay. First things first, don't ignore the summons. Some people that I've talked to say, well, I just ignore it every year.
I know a few people who have ignored it. No one's ever, as far as I know, no one's ever been arrested, but tell us what can happen.
You can be arrested.
Okay.
You don't hear those stories because those people are in jail.
They're gone.
You know, the cops probably have bigger fish to fry, but people are getting arrested for pretty much the smallest thing these days, so you don't want to tempt fate.
Like barbecuing at Lake Merritt?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a whole other
like Oh, yeah, the really dangerous stuff. Yeah.
So you don't want to be in an orange jumpsuit. It'll wash you out. And also, prison is scary. So you don't want to do it. Just show up. But there are ways you can get out of it once you are in the courthouse. And I'll tell you some of them. I believe you should just do your civic duty. I did. But if you really don't want to, here are some tips. So there is an option to postpone. But like, would you want a dark cloud of imminent jury duty hanging over your head for 6 months?
No.
Just get the unpleasant thing out of the way. That's my take. If you have evidence of an upcoming trip, you can get out of it. So if you get the jury summons, book a trip and bring the receipt.
Question, how far does the trip have to be?
Probably further than San Francisco to Oakland.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what I had in mind.
You probably have to be two counties away, probably.
Okay.
You're like, listen, the Best Western in San Francisco is expecting me to check in tomorrow.
Right.
So I can't do this.
Guys, I am going to Fresno.
Yes. Also, if you have a hardship, like if you don't make enough money and you can't take the time off work, that is legitimate, but they actually cross-reference and like make sure that's true. If you want to bring any of this stuff up to the judge, he goes backstage. That's what I call it.
Yeah, I clearly. I have text message evidence.
I'm like, they're backstage deliberating.
Emmanuel refers to the judge's
off.
Chambers as backstage.
Yes.
And I love it.
So he goes backstage and looks over the things and comes back and he's like, y'all thought, but no. So it's not actually that easy to get off. You can try, but don't be overconfident that you can get out of this and game the system. Something that Carrie from Sex and the City learned the hard way.
I'm just going to tell them that before 10 a.m., as far as I'm concerned, everybody's guilty. I figure I'll be out in no time.
She thought.
She served.
Someone else who didn't get out of it, Liz Lemon from 30 Rock.
I am going to jury duty, but I will be right back. I got my Princess Leia outfit, some Playgirl magazines from the early 1980s. They will dismiss me immediately as a weirdo. And I don't really think it's fair for me to be on a jury because I'm a hologram.
You seem fine to me. Report to jury room B.
Wow.
See?
That's what happens when pickings are slim. They're like, holograms, come with.
Points for creativity, but no dice. So chances are you're going to end up there filling out a questionnaire. And that's when the lawyers are trying to gauge whether you're going to be biased for one side or the other.
Ooh, do you sense that they're like watching you like an eagle or a vulture? A bird, essentially.
Yes, they are looking at nonverbal cues. Hmm. They're also stereotyping you based on your demographic. They stalk your social media to see what kind of things you're posting. Yes.
I'm sorry, wow. They looked at your Twitter, which is excuse my beauty without the E on Twitter.
Thank you.
And excuse my beauty with the E on Instagram.
Exactly. And they probably listened to this podcast, so you guys are next.
They're surprised they still called you after they listened to an episode of The Cooler.
Well, as someone who deleted all of their social media apps the first time that they went through customs, this happens coming through U.S. immigration.
Damn.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
On top of fondling my hair, they're also going to be looking at my social media.
Sliding into your DMs.
Wow.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No one wants that. So on this questionnaire, you should exaggerate some of your views because the next day, the lawyers and the judge are going to ask you questions about it. That's the only way you can get out of it at that point.
In front of everyone?
Oh, yeah. In front of hundreds of people.
Jeez. Okay.
There was 300 people there.
I think that the audience.
Yes, of course. Adoring fans.
What was
what
your costume?
Them. I went with professional fish. And I shouldn't have because apparently the way you dress also factors in. If you dress the part, they're like, that person seems responsible. If you dress goofy or dress down, they're like, I don't want these problems. You're not on the jury. And
well,
I wish I
had
known that.
That didn't work for Liz Lemon, so I can still use my Clueless Dion costume and serve. Okay. Patent everything.
So on this day, people started acting a damn fool. This one guy said, I don't believe in the court system. I only believe in dueling. We should bring that back. And they were like, sir, you can go. Exit stage right. Also, something else that you should know is when someone says something wild like that, if you're nodding and using your nonverbal cues to agree with some wild stuff, they will see that and then be like, okay, that person agrees with this person, so like, let's get them out as well. So I should have nodded and been like, yeah, dueling is amazing and we should do that. Hamilton was great, but I didn't do it.
Well, Hamilton is great.
Yes.
Okay.
Legally, that's been proven.
Another person who acted a fool was this man who said, I don't believe in all of this. It's against my Chinese culture. And then they asked a woman a few seats down who was also Chinese, is this true? Do you feel the same way? And she was like, that is not a thing at all. As RuPaul says, don't F it up in terms of the questionnaire, because the only reason that the lawyers will ask you questions is if you have some wild stuff on there, and then you can talk about dueling or your Chinese culture or whatever. Okay? Here's another tip. Don't get drunk on your lunch break.
Oh, okay. Mr. Hapsis.
So during the selection process, when they're grilling the other people, it had been half a day already. I wasn't one of the people being grilled. I was with the fans in the audience.
Exactly.
And so I went to a bougie restaurant, ordered ceviche and a cocktail.
Of course.
So they don't serve cocktails during jury duty or ceviche?
Not in the cafeteria. You have to go elsewhere. And so I was tipsy. And then when I return, they are voting people off left and right. It was like the Red Wedding episode of Game of Thrones.
Jesus.
Dropping like flies. And the second replacement name called was mine. And I said out loud, because I was drunk, FML. And people laughed around me. And then I had to go up there and I sit in a seat. And the judge looks at me and says, why are you sitting in the wrong seat? And I was like,
no.
Oops, my bad. When I meant to say, oops, I'm too drunk to be here right now.
Wow. So assigned seating and everything.
So yeah, don't drink and civic duty because it's not a good look.
All of this was accompanied with aggressive hiccuping, I hope.
It was a mess. But they selected me anyway. And at first I was an alternate juror and I was mad. I was like, if I'm stuck here for the next couple of weeks, I better be the star.
The mm-hmm. understudy. I mean.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I don't do that.
You could have like thrown what, pebbles or something under someone's feet. You could have did a showgirl situation.
Oh, I was going to say.
Take someone out.
Yeah.
I should just point at someone and be like, they like dueling. Get them out of here. I ended up becoming juror number 8. It all worked out. I mean, kind of. I was stuck there for 3 weeks still. But if you are selected, don't be late for your first day because every single person will hate you. When you're late, everyone, including the lawyers, the defendants, the plaintiffs, the court reporter, the judge, everyone's waiting on your ass.
So maybe that's why they haven't picked me. They're like, we see that name. Mm-hmm. She probably will be late every day.
So yeah, just don't do it because when you do come in, they just stare daggers into your face. Well, that's what I did to the people who were late.
Obviously, yeah, yeah.
So if someone passes out, keep calm and carry on. Here's a little anecdote from day one.
Oh, God, that's such specific advice. I know that you're about to tell me this happened.
Juror number one taps me on the shoulder first day and says, I love your shirt. I'm excited to look at all your outfits over the next 3 weeks. I was like, she's so nice. She's going to be my jury mom.
Instant
love
her. BFF.
2 minutes into the judge's instructions on how it all was going to go, she raises her hand and says, Judge, I don't feel well. Remember, she's behind me, so I don't see what happens.
Oh,
everyone
no.
gasps. Mm. She falls over on her side. Her eyes are open.
Are you kidding?
But she's unresponsive. And she's twitching.
Okay, so question. Was this a gag?
It was a good one, if so, because she was out. And then one of the alternates happened to be a nurse. So she runs over and she's like, juror number one, like, blah, wake up. Are you there? And taking her pulse. And then cops are coming into the courtroom. It's crazy. And after a few minutes of trying to rouse her, she's like, can you hear me? Can you hear me? And then juror number one goes from being on her side. She snaps up and says, what? And people are all like, oh. And she was like, I didn't just pass out. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, so she didn't even realize what had happened.
And then she starts puking.
Oh, like no. Projectile exorcist style?
Into a trash can, thankfully. And ooh. Then that was full and we needed to get a second one. And I had like Kleenex and I was trying to help, but I didn't know what to do. And it was really scary. Anyway, she was wheeled out by paramedics on a stretcher.
Covered in Kleenex.
And did not return. So if that happens, try to be helpful. It was crazy.
Shout out juror number one and wishing her a speedy recovery.
Okay. Yes. You know what my major takeaway from that story was? You know, movies when they say, is anyone a doctor? You should be saying, is anyone a nurse?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Those are the real heroes.
R-N.
Do get enough rest before you go to this trial because shit is boring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also disqualified on that point for me as well, but go ahead.
Yeah, you have like half an hour sleep a night.
So apparently they know me. The jury duty fuck pool knows me and this is why I have not been chosen.
Better than you know yourself.
They have seen your text message timestamps.
Oh, and my social media apparently.
Yes.
Tweeting at 2 a.m. is
how,
yeah,
how can you can be witty at 4 a.m.? I have no idea.
Do not get hypnotized by the 80s carpet. It will numb your mind. And before you know it, you're doing that jerking away from a 2 second slumber thing.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. The dad sleep, I like to call it. Whoa, I wasn't sleeping.
It's so embarrassing.
It's horrible. So is it like a Portland Airport level 80s carpet?
Oh, well, that would be fun to look at. This is way worse. It's just brown and like weird patterns and stripes. And yeah, no good. Do look on the bright side. Sure, you're into jury duty. But you get a chance to be away from the office. You experience a new commute.
Mm-hmm,
and that's cute.
Mm-hmm.
You explore a new neighborhood as if you live there.
This is really stretching.
Meet new people. Catch up on readings.
In court. You meet new people in court.
And live a unique experience that you then turn into content for your podcast.
Okay.
That's most important. Don't bring a cup of ice and crunch on it for hours during emotional testimony. Which one alternate did.
Wow.
And I was like, you're not even a real juror and you're annoying.
She doesn't even go here.
I hated him for that. And he also was very late all the time. So not my fave.
See previous point.
You get to meet new people who crunch on ice.
Who are
inopportune times.
And just faint all the time.
Get to know the building. Find the quiet bathrooms, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
You don't want to hear like the lawyer fart or like the defendant like pee or whatever.
Kind of takes all the gravitas out of the situation.
Yeah. You need some mystery there.
Yes. Serious question. What legal movie did you pretend that you were in?
Ooh.
Well, I'm glad you asked. Legally Blonde, duh.
Oh. Not like A Few Good Men.
No, I felt fly. It was as if I was holding a chihuahua, but I wasn't. That would have kept me awake, but alas.
I'm a Law and Order girl myself, so I just would have been like, doom, doom, every time they moved on to
heinous.
So after the trial, you might have the urge to be the foreman because you want to be the star. I'm talking about myself here.
Oh, I was going
to
say.
Don't do that because it's a lot of responsibility and you don't get to be the one who can be kind of outrageous in your opinion. You have to be like the equalizer and like, oh, well, this person hasn't had time to talk or like, do you feel comfortable with this decision? Blah, blah, blah.
That sounds boring.
Yeah. I wanted to be more intense. And so thankfully I was not the foreperson. So keep that in mind. But if you're one of those like calm, rational people, be the foreman, and then you can put it on your resume on LinkedIn.
Yeah. A lot of pressure comes with being first violin. You know, it's just a lot to live up to.
And the biggest thing that I learned was don't judge a book by its cover. So you don't really get to talk to your fellow jurors that much. I mean, you can talk about stuff in the hallway, but people generally are on their phones the whole time, and you don't really get to know them. I talked to a few of them. There's a librarian, a teacher. Generally, it's a very solitary duty. And so you end up judging people, just like lawyers are judging us of like who should be on the jury. We're judging each other like, how is this person going to vote? And my trial happened to be about a fire where someone died.
Ooh.
And the daughter was suing the landlord. And the defense was saying, well, you didn't love your mom that much. And also your mom was a hoarder. So basically she had it coming. And I was like,
that seems unkind.
Wow.
I mean, that's my take on it. Obviously, like, that's not what they said. But
I paraphrase.
Yes. So I looked at the jury and I was like, okay, it is majority straight white man. And so I'm assuming that they're not going to be as empathetic and I'm going to have to nudge them with the help of the girls to do the right thing. When it came time to deliberate, oh boy, the men were empathetic. And not all the women, but almost all of them were like, well, the daughter didn't cry enough for me. Like she didn't show enough emotion. And again, that's judging a book by its cover. So like 4 years after the fact, we're expecting this person in front of a bunch of strangers to give a huge performance and like sob. And she was crying, but they thought she wasn't crying enough.
Oh. And even if she had been crying enough, they probably would have said it looked overly rehearsed.
Right.
Yes. So you can't win. And also if it was a son of a person who died, would they be judging the son for not being emotional?
Oh, man.
I don't know.
No, he would be strong. He's so brave to get up there. And
strong upper lip.
Yes.
Women, come on. You got to look out for each other. No one else is gonna.
Yeah.
Apart from Emmanuel.
Right. So that was shocking. And it was a life lesson in general. Don't discount people just because of who they are. I mean, I already try to live that way, but sometimes it's hard. I assumed they would be brutes, but they weren't.
Brutes.
Look at you bonding with straight white men.
Growth.
Growth. Okay.
May I remind you that we have had one of them on this podcast? We're making strides, guys.
That's true. One in like 130 episodes.
Yeah, yeah. One.
Chuck Klosterman.
He was on it.
Shout out. If all these tips don't make you feel prepared for your future life as a juror, there's some pop culture you can watch. Option A. Pauly Shore's 1995 movie, Jury Duty, in which he is a stripper who can't get work and he needs a place to stay. And so he makes sure he gets on a jury. So he gets put up in a hotel and then he meets the hot chick from Wayne's World, Tia Carrera.
Schwing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. She's a babe.
It has a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But if you're more in the mood for something better, you could watch 12 Angry Men, which is also about being on a jury. And it has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think aggregating by 100% and 0% is a really good way to live your viewing life.
Extremes only.
Exactly. And in life too.
I object.
Sustained.
Overruled.
This is fun.
Doom doom.
Picture this scene. I am sprawled on my couch, enjoying my nightly trawl across the wastelands of the internet.
Oh, yeah.
You know it, I know it, we all do it. And what do I see but a new interview with the actor Jeffrey Tambor?
Mm-hmm.
He has risen.
He's giving it a bloody good go.
Of Transparent fame, yes?
Yes. Okay. So the star of Transparent. And for those who have forgotten, he is in a phrase that media outlets often employ, and I wish they wouldn't, one of the men taken down by the Me Too movement. Or in human speak, he was accused of doing things that were very unacceptable to his co-workers and was fired from his job on Transparent for it.
Yes.
You may also know him from the show Arrested Development. So if you go and read this article, it is quite something. Dude is self-pity itself. He does not admit to doing anything wrong, although he admits to being hard to work with and aggressive and that lines got blurred.
He's just passionate, you know?
Right. That's basically what he said.
Like all these creative types,
right? He had some outbursts that, you know? Yeah.
And honestly, the tone of this interview is quite something. He talks about reading Goodnight Moon to his young kids with the line, uh-oh, there's mud. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. Got to go through it. And he says, and I can't think of anything more typical in my life right now. But this is definitely part of a trend of these men whose true natures were revealed by Me Too and people coming forward. This trend is that these folks are now really trying to make their comebacks. Have you seen this as much as
I've seen it?
I feel like they are trying so hard. So
they didn't even wait that long.
This is the thing. There are stories already appearing, i.e. being planted in the media about how these men are trying to stage their comeback. So you have Mario Batali. The New York Times said he is, and I quote, traveling to Rwanda and Greece to work with refugees as a private citizen.
Honey, why you always got to use the black babies? Okay, anyway, go ahead.
He's following the playbook. Matt Lauer, apparently just chilling on his Hamptons estate, thinking about how to come back in the right way. Harvey Weinstein in rehab, we covered that.
He also is very aggressive in attacking the women who came out against him. He's just like, you're going to crash and burn and I'm going to ruin your career. And it's like, isn't that what you did to several women? And that's what they're
exactly
saying
exactly
happened. I don't know if you guys heard about Roman Polanski over in Poland giving an interview, and he talked about the Me Too movement as well.
Still running his mouth.
Yeah. And he basically said that the movement is sweeping up and gobbling up people who don't deserve to be accused.
Well,
indiscriminately.
The thing I've noticed about like the old guard is that their responses are so predictable, right? Like, of course, like these people are just doing what they know how to do. Charlie Rose, for example, the PBS host who was removed from his show, he is now apparently planning a show that will focus entirely on the stories of the men.
I did read that by the Me Too movement.
Are you serious?
And all these guys just suggest that everyone needs to lighten up and that everything was much more fun in the 60s when you could grope a woman and she wouldn't even complain.
Well, that's that we came from a different time sort of narrative. And when it was okay, when women enjoyed having their butts grabbed and being forced into a corner and watching us masturbate into plants, they enjoyed it then. Just saying.
A different time in which Sean Connery can admit to hitting women in positive context.
Remember when the women that we abused didn't have agency?
Yep.
Oh, the good
those
old days.
Remember when they just stayed quiet and just let us do it? Wasn't that wonderful? And like the stakes, I get it, are lower for these older guys, these pariahs, because they can just go and like float in Malibu for a bit. That's all they have to do. Live out their last 15, 20, 25 years just floating. But with someone with, quote unquote, their whole life and career ahead of them.
Which is who? Because everybody, okay, go ahead.
Well, did you see Aziz Ansari?
Oh, yeah.
How did you feel about that apology?
An apology?
Sorry, not sorry.
I don't think that was an apology at all. If I remember correctly, his apology was basically an acknowledgement that it happened, but his experience of the events were different than her experience of the events. And he basically apologized if she felt that the experience was traumatic.
It was the classic, I'm sorry if you were offended. I'm sorry if you felt violated. Guys, they're planning these comebacks. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. They are trying. And I just want to pause here and say that once again, we are talking about the men rather than the women. And it is not lost on me that this is a very strange situation for us to be in. So let's just pause for a second and think about some things that women have said. Tarana Burke, for example, the woman who actually started the phrase Me Too. I think it's pretty well known now that it was not Alyssa Milano.
Yeah. It was not invented in Hollywood.
No. Tarana Burke has feelings on how we can go forward, like what a post-Me Too era might look like. So I want to just play them for you.
Me Too, the work that I was doing, is really about survivors talking to each other. And so how we continue this after this moment is gone is that we continue those conversations and we start talking about, like, what does community healing look like? And I think survivors will be at the forefront of that.
There was also this really powerful New Yorker article, an interview with the actress Annabella Sciorra. She is one of the women that says she was raped by Harvey Weinstein. And I cannot recommend everyone to read this highly enough. It is a really troubling read, but she talks about being very much on display when you come forward. And it's an interview with Ronan Farrow. The interesting thing is, the first time Ronan Farrow called her saying, I've heard these rumors, I'd like to talk to you about them, she told him, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's got to be really challenging as a woman to step forward anyway and talk about what's happened to you in a sexual assault or a rape situation. But then to accuse a really powerful man also brings along extra scrutiny. So the attorney general for the state of New York recently was accused in an article that was co-written, I believe, by Ronan Farrow. The story broke that he had done all kinds of egregious things to women while using his platform to be a protector and a proponent for the Me Too movement. So the story's broke. He's recently stepped down. But one of the women who accused him said that she was advised by a friend to not say anything.
Yeah.
Because he's such a powerful man and he's such a political presence in sort of like the movement for Me Too and for the protection of women that they thought that it would be detrimental to her and that it would be bad for him.
But yeah, it's an impulse that is absolutely understandable. And one of the toughest bits to read in that New Yorker article, the interview with Annabella Sciorra, is when she says, and I want to read this to you in full, now when I go to a restaurant or to an event, people are going to know that this happened to me. They're going to look at me and they're going to know. I'm an intensely private person and this is the most unprivate thing you can do.
Mm.
And in that same article, the actress Rosie Perez says that she actually encouraged Annabella Sciorra to come out and talk about this rape, this alleged rape by Harvey Weinstein, because she had a similar experience of going public about her own assault in a different context. And Rosie Perez says, I told her, I used to tread water for years. It's fucking exhausting, and maybe speaking out, that's your lifeboat. Grab on and get out. The water never goes away. But after I went public, it became a puddle, and I built a bridge over it, and one day you're going to get there too. So these are the kind of voices and the kind of stories that when you hear about these men already strategizing their comebacks, your response is like, well, no, you don't get to do that. But the trouble is, since they didn't ask, what are we to do with this overflowing dumpster of dudes?
The ones who are going to try to come back?
Yeah.
At this point, I've lost everybody. I feel like I've got nobody. Yeah. They're like, I mean, every week somebody's coming out.
You don't have
something.
Anyone left.
I've got no one. Then you have this question of like, okay, well, how do you deal with the art that this person has already produced? Do you, and we've talked about this before on the show, do you completely just stop watching it? Does it go away? I mean, I believe that The Cosby Show has been yanked from a couple of networks at this point. Like, it's gone. You're not getting it unless you buy the box set. And then how do you deal with this person's work moving forward? And I was having a conversation with someone and they were talking about whether or not there's like a line of demarcation. Like, if you can still enjoy what they've done in the past, but you don't enjoy anything that they do in the future, or like, how does that work?
Cease enjoyment right now.
I don't think that I can deal with Harvey Weinstein at all. I thoroughly enjoy Project Runway and his name is all over that. And then this conversation also happened recently when people were talking about Scarlett Johansson and her wearing Marquesa, which was founded by Harvey Weinstein's wife. And so does the baby go out with the bathwater? Are we completely done? Do we wash our hands with everything that these men have touched?
Okay, so I want to ask you guys, exile. How do you feel about the concept of exiling these guys? Because a lot of people are really comfortable with the concept of that, like as a punishment for them, but also as like a corrective and a deterrent. Like, you do this and this is what happens to you. You do the crime and you pay the time. And I get that impulse.
Well, listen, I know people who are in jail for less. Okay, so we're going to exile. And when you say exile, I think of like Treasure Island or like a nice, beautiful island.
Oh, this will not be to a nice island.
They can't go to the nice island. I know people who are in jail for less and who are serving time. So yeah, make them go away.
To play devil's advocate here.
Well, you have just been in the courtroom.
right.
You know whereof you speak.
Yes. That is an alluring strategy. If you did the crime, you do the time, another courtroom slogan, and you're exiled and you're done.
You go and live on Trash Island. Off you go.
But the thing is that there's a spectrum of indiscretions. There is a Harvey Weinstein and a Cosby and a Polanski, and then the Aziz Ansari thing feels a little more nuanced to me and to a lot of people, it seems like, on the internet. So, like, do they all get the same exile sentence or not? And it seems like where we are right now, it's very much like that person's canceled, they're done, and let's move on and never speak of them again. But there are certain situations where I'm like, can they never overcome this one moment in their life? And I'm not talking obviously about like rape or like big things like that, but is that person canceled for the next 60 years? Mm. Or can you not watch any of the movies they ever were in or whatever? So maybe the answer is just continuing to think about it. And there is no silver bullet in this sense.
It is also worth mentioning that we ostensibly do have a justice system that is meant to deal with crime if a crime has been committed. Like, it's done its work with Bill Cosby. Eventually, finally, Bill Cosby is going to be in jail for a very long time. Ed Westwick of Gossip Girl is being investigated by the Los Angeles authorities. But to your point about the spectrum, Emmanuel, if there are no criminal proceedings and if there is no crime, quote unquote, by the legal definitions being committed here, if it's just general shittiness, what do you do with that? Mm. How do you process? How do you move forward?
I think it is very individual, and we have talked about that in our previous conversations about where does the artist stop and the art begin, or like how do you process those two things together? And you just have to see where it sits with your own self. There is no right answer. Like with Johnny Depp, for instance. Mm,
who had the great fortune of all his shit coming out before the Me Too movement.
Before, yes.
Preemptive.
So now he's in a Harry Potter movie, and now on the set, they're saying he's having blow-ups and acting erratic and being crazy aggressive, which is what his ex-wife said he was when he abused her. But it didn't matter, like you said, because it was pre-Me Too. But he's just out here wilding out. I used to love him and Winona, but I have to draw a line there. Now I have to decide, do I see this Harry Potter movie? I love Harry Potter, but he's stanking it up, and I don't like that.
But see, he's an example of why I think the cancellation culture is so strong right now, because for so long there have not been consequences and repercussions. So now people are just like, canceled, done, we're not tolerating it anymore. And I think the longer the Me Too movement goes on, the more it brings it to the forefront, and then it's not like a movement, it's just integrated into our culture. Right. And I think the more integrated into our culture these conversations become, the more people will be likely to think critically about each individual situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It won't be just like, oh, finally, justice.
This stuff, like, we're not going to solve it. We're not going to fix it, especially not on a podcast. But the men who do wrong and have done wrong are not the people that we should be paying attention to here, the most attention. Those people are victims. But the men are still here, which is why we are having this conversation. And since so many of them are clearly trying to orchestrate their comebacks, isn't it at least a little on us to have a say and like a stake and be invested on how they get to do that, if at all? Because the alternative is that they decide how they do it. And they've been making the decisions for a little bit too long, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would say.
Please, can we continue to talk? Because the alternative is they get to do all the decision making again. And that's what led us here in the first place.
Exactly.
It's the bee in the pig.
Hey, the bee in the pig. Hey.
All right, so you know what that song means. It is time for me to share a little bit of pig and a little bit of pit. And because I want to end on a high note, I'm going to start with a pit. And my pit this week is a social media account called All Black Everything. Because I am all black everything. But you know what? This social media account, I do not agree with. So we all know that Donald Glover / Childish Gambino has been having an amazing couple of weeks. He had an amazing episode of Atlanta when he basically talked about the complexities of black childhood through a FUBU jersey, which I totally could relate to. That episode of SNL when he co-hosted and basically turned Kanye's MAGA tweets into something laughable. I mean, yes, my life got it. And then he dropped the music video, This Is America, which basically was a critique about American culture and black people in American culture. And there have been 1.5 million think pieces written about it, so I'm not going to go into that. Just Google them. But there's also been some criticism, and there have been some people trying to discredit his voice as a black artist. Recently, a photo of Donald Glover and his longtime partner surfaced. It's him and his two children just living their lives, looking fabulous. Nice little family, right? What could be wrong? Here's what's wrong. The social media account All Black Everything posted the photo with the caption, quote, "Before everyone starts talking about how great of an artist Childish Gambino is and how, quote, woke he is, remember this." And the this is that his partner is not a black woman.
Oh.
So basically, what this social media account and the people who commented on it after and liked the picture and shared the picture are trying to assert that Donald Glover does not have the right or is somehow disqualified from talking about or commenting on the black experience because because his wife is white. Although we don't, no one knows. We don't even know who this woman is. She may not be white. We don't know what she is, but she's not black. That's the point. And Jordan Peele kind of went through this. Jordan Peele is the director and the writer behind Get Out. He went through something similar because his wife is also white. And people were like, how dare you? How dare you talk about being a black man and the black experience in America when your wife is white? But you know what? My response is, how dare you? How dare you? Regardless of who he marries, he cannot get out of being a black man in America. Neither one of these men can get out of being a black man in America. You cannot marry. You cannot date your way out of the black experience. When you are born as a black person in this country, you're born with all of the joy and all the burden that that means. And so as you guys know, my husband is white. And I got a lot of that flack when we got married and we were dating because people were like, oh, how dare you?
You got it yourself.
Yes. And they tried to take my black card. My black card, I was born with it and I'm going to die with it, honey. You're not taking it. So don't get me wrong. I understand that this is a tender subject because being a black person in this country, you're like, how can you be with someone who cannot relate to your experience as a black person? How can you talk about and comment on the black experience? But I just want to pose a question that is similar but not exactly the same, which is there are a lot of feminists in this world who marry to men.
Okay? Boom.
Right? You're married to a man that does not change how you feel about being a woman, and that does not change your experience about being a woman in this country. So please, shut down the ignorance, people.
Wakanda forever, melanin forever.
Forever. And as my son once told me,
Mom, you're from Wakanda and you married an outsider.
But guess what? I'm still from Wakanda.
Still love you, Dad.
My peak of the week comes courtesy of legendary actress Rita Moreno.
Yes.
Yes.
Who was on The Wendy Williams Show. And although she had been in a long marriage, I think she was married to her partner for over maybe 30 years, she had a few passionate affairs in her day.
Ooh.
And two of the men on that list were none other than Marlon Brando.
He got around.
Mm.
Didn't he have
Legend
sex
said
with,
that he was with Richard Pryor?
And
everyone.
James Baldwin?
Yes. That's yeah. what they, that's what, allegedly. So he also had sex with Rita Moreno.
Nice.
And so here's what she had to say about Marlon.
He slayed me good because he was... He was the king of everything. Everything. He was the king of movies. He was the king of... He was really one of the most sexual men on earth. He was extremely... Shut up.
Ooh.
This makes me wish I was born in another time because it sounds like Marlon was putting it down.
And you would get shit from people for dating that white man as well.
Clearly. But you know what? Living my life like it's golden.
Yeah.
Also... She talked a little bit about her little rendezvous with Elvis Presley. And apparently Marlon got really jealous when he found out that it was a thing.
Yeah, wouldn't you? It's Elvis Presley.
Exactly. So later, Wendy asked her, between the two of them, who was better? And honey, she spilled the tea.
Uh-oh.
Have a listen.
That's like a two-year-old and the king.
So I take it Elvis wasn't so good.
He wasn't.
Bless his heart.
But you know, yeah, bless his heart. You know, he was really a sweet fellow. He was very shy, handsome boy. But you know, Elvis Presley and Marlon Brando, come on. Amateur night.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so dem hips do lie.
Dem hips absolutely do lie because apparently he ain't had nothing on Brando.
Wow.
Mm. This is just a PSA. To remind us all to get some and get some good, because if it's real good, even 30 years later, you'll still be glowing about it.
Yes.
On the Wendy Williams
exactly.
show.
Exactly. And if you would like to visit Westworld, choose a robot that looks like Marlon Brando.
Oh, yes.
Food for thought. Nighttime thoughts.
Thought spelled T-H-O-T.
My song of the week this week comes from Queen Janelle Monáe.
Of course.
You guys know that she dropped an album, Dirty Computer, recently. She already had us with the vagina pants, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Then she went on with another video in which her and Tessa Thompson continued to steam up the screen.
The Janelle and Tessa Thompson thing, like, I'm here for
all day.
It. So strong.
All day. So I've been listening to Dirty Computer, and there's one song on there that gets me going. It's a song that you want to listen to before you have to walk into a room and negotiate, or you just want to go out and start feeling yourself before you hit the dance floor or whatever. And it's called The Juice. It's featuring Pharrell, and she basically is like, you got the juice. Don't let nobody tell you different. Your cup it's overfloweth, and work with it. So let's ride out on that.
You're so damn electric, you. All right. You know you got that juice. You know you got that juice. You know you got that juice. Now squeeze all that passion fruit. Ain't no one fresher than you. Ain't no one fresher than you. And if they try to...
This episode was edited by me, Emmanuel.
Yay!
With help from Ashley Ann Craigbaum.
And shout out to our podcast, Papa David Marcus, for making sure all of this happened.
And big thanks to Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, who always makes this beautiful music.
Until next time, find us on social media. I'm Excuse My Beauty with the first D on Instagram, without the first D on Twitter.
I'm at Teacup in the Bay on all relevant platforms.
And you can find me at Jimmy Dressaz on Instagram and Twitter.
But not LinkedIn.
Not LinkedIn. No, don't find me on LinkedIn.
Never that.